Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
In this show, we're going to dive deep into flips, wholesales, holding rentals, and creatively structuring deals.
So that we can show you how you can achieve that lifestyle of freedom that you desire. Hey guys, welcome to the Chasing Freedom Show with Noah and Jeff. Today we have a rock star guest. This guy went from $212 in his bank account to $1.2 million in real estate in just 365 days. We got our buddy Chris Petty with us. He is crushing it in Atlanta, Georgia. And today we're going to go back to the how he got started and kind of track up to where he's at today and how he's making so many moves in such a short period of time. Chris, thanks so much for being with us today, man.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having us. And so I started out and it was kind of fell into place of by mistake. And
yeah.
So I left college at UGA, did a year of college ministry. And then after that moved up to north of Atlanta and was doing supply chain analytics, worked for a 9-to-5, found a house hack deal by mistake and read a couple powerful books, and just that's how my real estate journey started. And that was just over a year ago from now.
Nice. Wow. Let's talk accidental house hack. Break that down for us. But how'd that happen? What did that look like?
Yeah. So I had a notification that I had a job accepted in North Georgia with a company named Mohawk, and they gave me a little housing allowance. And so I was like, well, I guess I need to find a house in 30 days. And yeah. So naturally, I went on MLS, but then it was like, okay, I think, haven't read my first real estate book yet. I was like, what are creative ways to find a house that's vacant really fast so I can move in? And so I got on Airbnb and started messaging hosts. This was 6 months after COVID started. And I was just thinking, I was like, there's got to be some hosts out there that have vacant properties that need to liquidate. And so sure enough, I sent out about 30 or 40 messages, which I don't even think Airbnb allows now. And so at the time, it worked. And I found an investor who just put his property up maybe 3 or 4 months before I messaged him. And the reason he put it up was because he had to move to Canada with his family because of COVID restrictions and lockdowns that were just now starting. Wow. And so he didn't even have – that was his personal residence. And he didn't have the intentions of making an Airbnb when he purchased the property. And so he just had to throw it up just because to try to generate some sort of revenue. It wasn't doing anything. And I came in at the right time, was like, hey, I'm in need of a house quick. I'm already approved through FHA and, we can make it happen in 30 days. I'll take it as is. He sold it to me furnished. It was a grand slam deal. And so moved in, found two guys to come live with me. It covered the mortgage, all the utilities, and then cash flowed a little bit.
And you still got your housing allowance on top of that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. The housing allowance paid the down payment for the FHA.
And
so it worked out great just of how everything fell into place. But this was before I read my first real estate book. I didn't know anything about investing. Just kind of fell into it. And so, but once that started turning, I was like, wow, this is really cool. I need to do this on a large scale.
Yeah. Man, dude, I want to dig in a little bit more on your mindset just because I'm so impressed by it. So what was it that kind of made you unsatisfied with what you were finding on the MLS?
Yeah. So at the time, it was a small town in Calhoun, Georgia, north of Atlanta, about an hour. It didn't have too many properties that were for sale. I think with COVID, everybody was just kind of taking a pause at the beginning of it. And I was like, I need to find a property that I can move into really quick. Cause my job starts in, 20 days and I had no plan. I really didn't want to rent because I just was getting out of college and my whole life I've heard of never rent, always come in and put, build equity. And so that was my main focus at the time. And just sitting down, I kind of grew up, and this may have some sort of relation to why I love real estate is because I grew up always looking for flips of things on Facebook Marketplace. So you have to get creative in your own mind when doing that type of work. And so naturally, I just sat down and looked and said, where can I find a vacant property right now that somebody may or may not want to sell? And so Airbnb was the first place I looked, spent a little bit of time on it. And it worked out for that specific deal.
I love that, man. That's so creative. I haven't heard anybody say that they bought a house by going on Airbnb and messaging the homeowners. But it just goes to the speaking of thinking outside of the box, right? Like, you noticed that the circumstances at the time had created a niche opportunity, and then you were able to take advantage of that and get an awesome house that then you went in, rented it out, and really, I'm assuming that then kickstarted your investment career, right? That got your wheels turning, like, oh, whoa, this is real. We could actually do something. So what did you do after the house hack? So you do you still live in this house hack?
I don't.
Okay. So you got the house, you put two buddies in, it's renting out, you're making money. What was your next move?
Yeah, absolutely. So I had a W-2 job at the time and was like, well, I don't have any type of payments. You know, only living expenses I have is, you know, your food and your just normal everyday bills. And so I started to save up a little bit and then start educating myself, you know, building a foundation. I read a Rich Dad Poor Dad, of course, and then another book just called Skip the Flip, because in my mind I was thinking flipping would be kind of what I would really be good at, just because that's what I've done with smaller items, you know, non-housing and things like that. And so read Skip the Flip, and that really just got my wheels turning of like, wow, there is a way that I cannot spend the next 40 years making somebody extremely wealthy, and I can come in and have passive income, and even learning what passive income was, what cash flow is, how you can build equity through real estate, the tax benefits. And so that really what has got my wheels turning. I found bigger pockets, started just going through podcasts. I think Spotify is just now releasing all the stats for the year of how many podcasts and music and genre and things like that. And it came out to, I listened to 52 Bigger Pockets podcasts in the past 45 weeks. And so I was like, wow, that really is true. And so it's amazing how much you can learn. And if you build that foundation, it is 100% of how I got to where I was. And so there becomes a point of, everyone has heard of analysis paralysis, and you not wanting to have too big of a foundation to where you end up not doing anything and you get too analytical in your career and what you're trying to pursue. And so I think there's enough. Someone gave me an analogy sometime a few weeks back that said, if you're going to build a one-story house, you can do that on a 6-inch concrete foundation. But if you want to build the Empire State Building, it would crumble on a 6-inch foundation. So you have to get it up to where it's going to be a comfortable range. Yeah. But then once you have your basics down, it's okay. You know, having that blind confidence of going in and not knowing the next steps, you know, the first step, you may not know the last step. You're not along the way. And that was huge. Just blind confidence is just being able to go into a situation and saying, okay, I know this is in the right direction. Do I know the outcomes of it? Potentially. Do I know the steps? Maybe not.
Yeah.
I have to figure it out along the way.
Yeah. And I wouldn't even like, for you, one of the things that I've noticed a lot, we've only been into this episode for a couple minutes now, but I've noticed you're a student to the trade, right? Like, you're listening to books, you're reading podcasts, but then immediately after, you're taking action. And I think the part that people struggle with, people love to learn, right? That's why there's an entire industry of selling books and podcasts and seminars and all this stuff, and people are willing to dump tens of thousands of dollars into it. The issue that I think a lot of people have is they consume the information and they let it go into the oblivion because they never take action on any of it. I think I've had a goal of the last 3 years to read 12 books every single year, and I've been able to hit it. And I think it is a contributing factor to my success. But I think I would be probably even further ahead if after reading each book, I took 15 days to implement what I learned on that book before starting my next book. But instead, I'm more concerned with just getting through my goal of 12 books a year instead of being like, you know what? If I only hit 8, but instead I hit those 8 and then I implemented 2 or 3 things from each book, I'd probably be further ahead because action matters just as much as the learning.
Yeah, absolutely. A goal that I have is to every book or podcast, I find one small thing to take action on, because especially with a book, you can come in and have just a whirlwind of knowledge just thrown right at you. And it's so easy to say, okay, I finished the book, put it on the bookshelf. You know, I know so many real estate investors out there that go through the same book every year. Mm-hmm. Even non-real estate investors, such as, you know, tradesmen, businessmen that, study, you know, how to win friends and influence people.
That's a great one.
CEOs that read that book once a year. And so it's really important to just take a small piece of that information that you learn and even come around and take action on it. And then if you have to revisit that book again, I think that's really smart. And so it's benefited me a lot, especially through going through this many podcasts, because you'll hear so many tips and tricks and just small knowledge, but being able to actually take action is crucial.
I agree, man. Do you have any books that you've read multiple times?
Yeah. Skip the Flip by Hayden Crabtree.
You really love that one, huh?
I love that book. And it's cut and dry. It's an easy read, but it has all of your basics that you need to know. And so I often tell people, Rich Dad, Poor Dad is incredible at establishing your mindset and kind of the bigger picture, but Skip the Flip is going to be more actionable steps and putting a roadmap out there for you to be able to go in and truly become a real estate investor.
I like that, man. That's awesome. Really cool.
So so you got the house hack, you then started studying, you learned a bunch. Where was that first area that you went and implemented this new knowledge in? What was the next deal that you set up?
Yeah. And so the next deal was about 4 months after I locked down my single family residence and, you know, started to generate a little bit of cash, but wasn't really enough to where I could see me being able to make another deal happen. And so I started reading on creative financing and learned soon that really the most important thing is the deal. So if you find a deal, financing can come after. And so find the deal, get it locked down, and then you have a period of whatever you established in, you know, the contract of due diligence, maybe up to 2 weeks, 3 weeks, and being able to find financing. And so that can be in tons of different creative ways. And so my very first large multifamily deal, I found it was around, there was 5 trailers, 8 acres, and 1 single-family home. So 6 units total. And I found it on MLS, but it was listed incorrectly. I think a new agent may have gotten a hold of the listing, and I was the first one to be out there on the property to look at it and was able to even talk with the owner. And they had this property in their family for 20 years. The dad passed away, and so it was a recent inheritance, and they didn't want anything to do with an investment property. They would rather have the cash. And so I was able to find a contract online and get that thing under contract quick and for the right price. And so once I did that, I was like, okay, you know, talk is talk. I have to step up to the plate and find financing. And so what I did was I started to reach out to the network I've established and using other investors in the area to see if they may have connections, ended up finding a realtor / investor in Athens, Georgia. And he happened to be in a spot where he just 1031 exchanged his investment property and needed to identify a property in 30 days. So this was huge. I mean, this was another piece of the grand slam to where he had money that needed to go somewhere really quick. And so I showed him the deal. We walked him through it. I gave him all the numbers. And he was ecstatic. And knowing that I was 30 minutes away from this deal, I was a hungry young investor. He really was able to put a lot of faith and trust in me and gave me, you know, we got conventional financing for the 80% and then we needed the 20%. And so that's 10% each.
Yeah.
He gave me my 10% for zero interest, 100%, just free money and said, pay me back within 2 years.
Yeah.
And so we were able to use that cash flow to pay him back in a year and claim 50% of the deal with absolutely zero money down. And it was just a true grand slam. And that's definitely one of the more creative ways of how I've structured my deals.
Dude,
I've got to say, I've got chills going up and down my arms right now. This has probably got to be one of the best stories on creative structuring, getting started, not being fearful. My eyes are almost watering up. I really love this story because it's so impactful. If you guys are listening to this, go rewind the episode, go back a minute and re-listen to that story, because for so many people, they're so scared to get started. They put all these false limiting beliefs in their head. And look at you. You read a book. You said, okay, look, here's my problem. How do I overcome it? You're solutions oriented. You found the solution, creative financing. You found a deal on the MLS that other people were looking past and you locked it up, not knowing how that would turn out, right? You probably were risking your earnest money, which at the time was probably a lot of money for you, but for you, yeah, it was worth the risk. And then my favorite part, you went out and you weren't greedy. You gave up half the deal, yep, that you found, and you were willing to give up half of that deal for someone else to bring in the money. And I think because you weren't greedy and you were probably open to hearing whatever this guy had to say, then he gave you your half of the money for free and just said, pay me back in 2 years. But yeah, so many people get caught up. We see this with new investors all the time. They want 80%, 90% of the deal because they think that they earned it, because they found it. And then you know what ends up happening is they end up with nothing because they lose the deal. We see that time and time and time, yep, again. And it's disheartening because I don't like to see people lose. But you've got to change your mindset. And you had this abundance mindset. You gave away half the deal, and in exchange, you got all the financing for pretty much free. I mean, you had to give it back, or pay it back.
Absolutely.
But that's a great story, yeah, man.
Yeah, that's rad, man. I love that you identified that in your learning, in your studying, you identified that the deal was the most important piece, and then that gave you all the leverage you needed. Then it gave you the confidence to go and get that deal, knowing that, okay, financing, because people get tricked, man. People really think that finding money is the hardest part of this game. Finding money, especially now, finding money is easy. We can't believe the amount of money that just gets thrown our way now that we have deals. You find the deals, the money comes. And so by you doing your research, by you studying and figuring that out, you're able to then find that deal and then add value to another investor by bringing him a deal that was a grand slam. So I'm sure if we had him on the podcast, it'd probably be a really similar story. He'd be like, man, this young investor just came and he's like, hey, I got this awesome deal. And he'd be just as stoked as you. And those are always the best deals. So that's awesome, man. Do you know the numbers on that project off the top of your head?
Yeah, absolutely. So we purchased, the purchase price was $175.
Okay.
And we came in 20% down and had rents coming in right at, I believe it was $2,800 a month. And so it was all awesome numbers already.
But yeah,
then we came in and we spent $20,000 on remodeling, which again, he fronted the money for all the rehabs as well. And we were almost able to take that deal and double our rents. And so it ended up just cash flowing incredibly great. And another thing too is Noah, going back to what you said about giving up 50% of the deal, I would have given up 80% of the deal, mm-hmm, knowing now what I would have learned from the process of taking a deal in, learning how to set up management and property management. And all the people that it connected me with my accountant, my lawyer, all of my team players. It's, yeah, crucial to scaling a real estate business. I think I'm extremely glad that I have 50% of the deal, but knowing what I know now, just being a part of a deal and having the knowledge that it brings to you from running it is, yeah, now this is easy. I can rinse and repeat. The players are in the game. And now, going back to what we've been talking about, let's go find the deal. The rest will come.
Yeah. And now you're a player in the game too. Like, you got your key members. But what's funny about real estate is you could be a very serious guy. You could have a ton of cash. But if you're not actively involved in real estate, then when you go to that lawyer, when you go to that CPA, when you go to the wholesaler, when you go to the contractor, you're not as impressive. Now that you're a key player in this deal, it kind of elevates you, right? They're like, oh man, Chris does deals. I want to make sure that I'm on Chris's good side, or I want to make sure that I'm doing business with Chris. And it makes that ability to do work together so much easier. So I love that. It's funny. Knowing I say this all the time on the show is like, give us 5 minutes with somebody and we can tell you if these people are going to be wildly successful. And it's all mindset. It's all, do you understand how real estate works? And it's, do you have the mindset to not be greedy, to add value to other people and know that your compensation is going to come from that? And Chris is like the best testament to that we've probably had on the show so far. So just kudos to that, man. Just keep rocking with that mindset. You're going to do big things. So that was five trailers in a single family, right?
Correct.
So you bought it $175, you put $20,000 into it for the rehab. You're in it like $195, and now your rents, you were at $28,500 on rents. Now you're somewhere around like $6,000 on rents, or close to.
We're right at $55,000, and we still have a little bit of remodels to go. And so
that's like rad.
It's buying a trailer park is different than standard real,
yeah,
estate.
Yeah.
Because you lose a little bit of the appreciation that you may gain in other forms of real estate, but the cash flow is there. And so we were able to come in, and the trailer park had been neglected for 3 to 4 years, just put a little bit of money into it to making it feel safer, and just cleaning up, throwing a little paint on some walls. And majority of the tenants stay. They're great tenants. We walked into the deal with great tenants, which doesn't happen very often. Yeah. And so we were able to provide them with 100% better housing, and they were okay with having to pay the difference. And so, because, you know, at the time as well that we were coming in, rentals were hard to find if you were a tenant. And so, we didn't have much turnover. We were able to work alongside the past investor and kind of see where the needs were needing to be met in the area. And he was willing to share that information with us.
That's awesome.
And so we were able to bring it up pretty quick. And because of the quick cash flow, I was able to turn around and use, you know, my percentage of the cash flow to pay down the debt for my original down payment on
That's
it.
Awesome.
We'll be generating that cash flow here soon.
Yep.
Dude, I just ran some quick numbers, and I'm actually pretty bad at math, so the chances that I'm wrong are pretty high. But
I was going to say, Noah pulled out his calculator, and I got scared,
just
bro.
Like, no, don't do it.
It's good. I'm good with my head, so I have all the answers he's going to give you for the calculator anyways.
But I thought it was pretty cool. So, you know, there's like this standard in real estate that everyone's, you know, there's two sides. Some people say you should be aiming for the 1% rule, which is your gross rent should be 1% of your purchase price or whatever. Your gross monthly rent should be 1%. And then there's the other side that says that doesn't exist anymore. And I think that really depends on what market you're in. But I just, again, could be wrong.
No, you're right. He's right under three. You're right. I watched your math. Right, I did it in my head first.
I wanted
first,
to
but
just
yeah.
put this disclaimer out there. But, dude, you're right under the 3% rule.
Yeah.
So you're almost 3X what the standard investor aims for on your first deal.
Second deal, sorry. We had, so the investor that we partnered with, he runs a one of the real estate groups in East Georgia.
Yeah.
And he came in as soon as we closed on this deal and just started saying, because he's also an investor / agent. And he said, you know, to anyone that thinks that there is, you know, not a 2% deal out there, you know, and he was able to show our numbers and said, it is so possible. This deal was found on the MLS, and, you know, it just takes the time and effort and will to go out and find those deals. And so they're not everywhere. And MLS is extremely hard to find even a 1.25% deal right now.
Yep.
So I got really fortunate, and we were very glad that deal went the way it did.
Yeah. That's awesome.
And to your point, one of the things I wanted to add is a lot of the times I think people expect something to be given to them or to find it. And so I call that being reactive. They're waiting for something to come to them.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the wrong approach. I think it's about being proactive. How do you go out and create the above average deal, the 3%, you know, monthly or whatever they call it, the 3% rule, the 2% rule.
Yeah.
But if you expect that to just come to you, you think you're going to be able to, you know, dilly-dally around and check the MLS and talk to a couple agents and you put in effort for 1 week and make it happen. It's not realistic. And I would still even say to this deal, you created that 3% rule, right? Like, you didn't just buy it at 3X what the average investor is looking for. You went out and created it. You did some tenant improvements you did some improvements to the property and you got it to that point. But I think people need to keep that in mind, that it's about being proactive, not reactive.
Yep. And for only $9,999, Chris will teach you how to find properties for the 3% rule.
Absolutely.
Cool, man. All right, so you get that deal set up. Hey, also real quick before we transition, kudos to paying down that loan and then getting to where you're at that free and clear point where you're just going to keep getting that cash flow monthly. I think a lot of guys would have been tempted in your shoes, because really up to this point, you just had the house hack. This was your first real estate deal outside of the house hack. A lot of guys would have been tempted to be like, okay, I'm going to pay off like 30% of my cash flow is going to pay that off, or 50% of my cash flow. And they're going to try and like live off of some of that. Kudos to just rolling that all back, getting that paid off. And then now you're in this position where you're going to get all that cash flow per month, and that'll do crazy big things for you. But let's transition to the quadplex deal. I know you got a fourplex that worked out like a grand slam. I want to hear more about that one. Let us know what that looks like.
Yeah, so 3 or 4 months after the trailer park, we've kind of settled down there. I'm now going back to the networking, finding other investors who are just willing to go and grab coffee and just kind of see what their journey was like, what information, advice they could have for me, and as well turn around and see what I can do for them. And so during one of those meetings, it was in the city that I lived in at the time, it was Calhoun, and an investor had just gone through a divorce. He was a small town investor, didn't have too many properties, and we had gotten into the conversation. I said, well, if you ever have a property that you're looking to liquidate, I would love to look at it and have that first opportunity. He said, well, actually, I do have one that I would be considered to get rid of here shortly. You know, would you want to go and ride over and look at it now? And I was like, absolutely, let's do that.
That's awesome.
And so that I could tell right then that he was willing to go show me the property right after coffee. Yeah. And so he's going to have a little bit of motivation there instead of saying, yeah, we'll go check it out in a few weeks or I'll send you the info.
Yep.
And so we went and looked at it. The property definitely needed a little bit of work, has been neglected, and told him I'm definitely interested. Let me get back to the house and kind of see what I can come up with. And, you know, what the numbers that made sense to me at the time, I was able to offer him $175 owner financed. And so I was offering him to, you know, see if he would be willing to owner finance.
Yeah.
And it ended up, he accepted the owner finance offer. It was $175, 5% interest, $5,000 down, which is insane.
Yeah, that's awesome.
$5,000 down, 5% interest, and then 15 years with no balloon. And so we ended up, you know, making it happen 2 weeks later and got into the quadplex. And it was as is, so he didn't have to do anything to it. Was able to come in and work three of the tenants out and come in and remodel those three.
Okay.
Get the rents to where they needed to be, which were, again, they were almost half of market rent. And really? So we were able to double all of those. And I'm in the process now taking this exact property to the bank, which I was meeting with yesterday, to come in and do a cash out refi. Yeah. So I can take that and then move forward to the next.
That's awesome. All right, so you picked it up for $175. What were rents? Do you know what rents were when you got it?
At the time, it was around, let me see, around $2,800, $2,700, the same ballpark. And so it's two three-bedrooms, two one-bedroom, one bath. And so
okay.
The one-bedrooms were renting for around $500, and the three-bedrooms were renting for right around maybe 800 or to 900 or so.
Okay. Yeah.
And, we've now doubled those. So the one bedrooms are renting right at 1,000, and then the three bedrooms are renting at 1,500.
Man, those are really impressive numbers for rent to purchase price. So 175 broken up over four units. Noah, what's that math?
Don't do that to me, bro.
I want to see if you can do it off the top of my head. It's got to be like somewhere between like 30. No, it's like 38 to 45 grand or somewhere a unit, right? Because 45 is 90.
43,
yeah. 180.
Yeah,
43. So 43 grand a unit, and you can get $1,500 a month in rent. That's just incredible. That's a really good market. Everybody, we're going to bleep out the name of the market that Chris was in for this show. So
what did you say?
So nobody goes and
you said Utah, right?
Yeah, he's in Utah.
You're in Salt Lake City, Utah.
You can tell from the accent. He's from the West Coast, so that's where he's at. But, man, no, those are really good numbers. And on the own and carry, that's really impressive, man. If you know the number that you put into each unit for rehab, awesome. If not, just kind of walk us through what you had to do in those units.
Yeah, so we started with a one-bedroom. It was in the worst condition. I paid the tenant to leave, and that way he could have money to go in and put a down payment on another rental unit. And so we came in and completely changed out, gutted almost everything. And so this one was in the worst condition. And so we came in, I put a drop ceiling in, all of the fixtures from electrical and plumbing, changed out all of the receptacles and painted everything, put in two new windows. And so, like I said, this one was in the worst.
This was a full gut. Yeah.
Yeah.
But we didn't have to do any drywall repair or drywall removing. And so we didn't have to come in and take out the wiring that was running behind the drywall. We didn't have to come out plumbing behind the drywall. It was all of the fixtures, the switches, the outlets,
okay, gotcha,
faucets, yeah, that type of stuff. So it was easy repairs, and I'd let the listeners know as well, I do own a contracting company, and so it made it extremely easy for me to be able to send my guys over in and fix up the place pretty quick.
Yep.
And get a tenant in there. And so, you know, not everyone, and I wouldn't encourage people to go that route. This was another thing that just fell into place. And so we were able to fix that one up for right in the neighborhood of $7,000 to $8,000.
Wow. Let's dive into that a little bit, because I want to talk about your contracting business and what are the pros and cons to that as being a flipper, or I guess like just a burr passive investor, because that's our model as well. I started a GC business. I've owned a GC business for like 7 years, but out here in Idaho for about 4. And that's our model, is to have the in-house guys in the GC business that do all of our flips and all of our turnkey renovations and all that kind of stuff. So we can control the pricing and we can control the scheduling of items. But how has it played out for you? What are the kind of benefits that you see to that? And then maybe, because you had said that you don't recommend that for everybody, what would make you say that it's not maybe the best route for everybody to go that way?
Yeah, so I fell into this as well. I was starting after my first property. I was still working my 9-to-5. Everyone at the time was talking about side hustles. Was the big popular word. I started a furniture assembly business, okay, where I would go in to someone's house and assemble their IKEA furniture for $75 or $100. And so super simple. I'm not handy at all, but with a screwdriver, a drill, and some instructions, you can kind of figure it out.
Yeah.
So I started that business and noticed I needed a helper on the side just to come in and hold stuff. And so finally found somebody and we started doing a couple of these jobs. And he was like, Chris, I know how to do, you know, painting, drywall. I can build a deck. I can do all this stuff. And I was like, well, what are we doing furniture? And yeah. So I was, you know, able to branch out, pick up some extra jobs to where we could kind of see his skills, and it worked out great. And at the time of January of this past year, I was able to leave my 9-to-5.
Nice.
And that's when the contracting business was able to speed up. February is when we bought that property, the trailer park. And so it all happened at the same time. I would have enough income coming in from the contracting business. And even though at the time I only had one guy, I was able to send him out, do these jobs, and I was able to survive. You know, again, at the time I didn't have, because of the house hack, my bills weren't too much.
Yeah.
And just continue to pick up more guys and allow them to kind of tell me what their favorite thing was to work on. And that's the type of business we were that day. And so,
I love that. I actually think that's really smart, because a lot of the frustration of running a business is trying to push people into a role that they're not suited for. And that, you read about that in business books and stuff, but I haven't heard that in the construction world of, hey, you want to work for me? Cool. What are you good at? Oh, you're really good at tile? Cool. Let's start a tile leg of the business. Like, yeah. That's awesome, man. That probably made it 1,000 times easier.
It does. And so we have my best crew now. That's what we did. I said, what is your favorite thing you want to work on? And what's the only thing you want to work on?
Mm.
And they said, painting. We love painting. We're good at painting. We're fast. I said, great. We're gonna do full-time painting. And so we turned around and I started digging and for leads here and there. And then we ended up realizing that we can get on board with companies like Open Door Capital and United Management, ABC, and come in, get contracts with them because they're house flippers. And every house that has ever been flipped, 90% of the time, it needs paint. Mm-hmm. And so now we're able to, it's 100% automated business. Work orders come in. We spit out a price based off of the numbers. It gets sent to my guys. They go do the work. There's a lockbox out there. And so I was able to automate it due to not having a 9-to-5. And I can have that income coming in from a little bit from real estate, a little bit from the contracting business, and was able to sit here and figure out how to automate it and be more of a visionary. And so, and I don't mean to take us off topic, but Noah and I went to a Bigger Pockets conference, and one of the speakers was Brandon Turner.
Yeah.
And he went up and showed a pyramid, and he said, everybody's going to start at a DIY. You know, that's it. If I ask you, how do you start a painting business? You're going to say, well, let's go get a truck. Let's go get paintbrushes. Let's go find out how to, you know, use painting trim without tape and all these little things. But in reality, it needs to be at the other way around. You need to be the CEO visionary and come in and say, okay, how do we start a painting business? Well, in order to have a painting business, we need to be able to have an omnipresence of, or be omnipresent and being able for people to come in and find us without us having to go and find them. And what are ways that we can do that? And so figure that out and then come around and you can work your way down the pyramid and, you know, be the visionary, be the CEO, then put people in place for the manager positions and then your DIY, your laborers, instead of starting from the bottom and tinkering with it and then being able not to grow because you haven't put those steps in place and really constructed your vision.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that, man. I think it's such an interesting way to just flip that mindset and what the outcome ends up being, right? You're growing and scaling a business instead of growing and scaling a job.
Yep.
And I think it's really hard for business owners and entrepreneurs to understand that difference. And, you know, one of the books I'd recommend to read to get out of that, what I would call that maybe like a trench or whatever it is, would be the E-Myth. Yep. E-Myth really helps you to understand the difference of, like, you know, right people, right seeds, making sure you're scaling, but also making sure you're scaling like in a safe and practical way. Because I think it's really easy to grow to failure.
Yeah, that's for sure. Yeah, I think I really love that you were just able to identify that piece and then start at the top and build down, because it's so easy. What happens is there's nothing wrong with being like, oh, I'm a painter, now how do I build a business? That's fine. But if you're looking at it as a true entrepreneur, I think people still then go, okay, I need to be a painter first before I can own a paint company. But that's not necessarily true. There's so many people in the world that own companies. I worked for a bunch of stupid people that didn't know how to do what I was doing. Like, I built pole barns when I was 19. The dude who owned the company could not come and spend a day with us building pole barns. The dude didn't know how. He didn't need to know how. He had a 7-figure business building pole barns and had no clue how to do the freaking thing, because he built a business from the top down. And so I think that's really crucial to identify as you're looking to start a business, is how can you build from the top down? Because if you build from the bottom up, it's really easy to get stuck at each individual step up, right? Okay, now I'm the DIY guy, I'm the technician. Oh, shoot, I got stuck here for a year. I was only planning for a month or so while I learned it. And then, okay, now I'm the manager. Crap, I got stuck in the manager role for 4 years. And now before you ever actually get to that entrepreneurial spot or that CEO, that visionary spot, it's been 5 years, where if you would have just started there, you could have built down so much faster than you build up. So I think that's an awesome point. I appreciate you bringing that up. Chris, unfortunately, we're running out of time. This was a really fun show. I think this is going to do really well with the listeners. I think you have an awesome story. Hit us with what books and podcasts. Obviously, you got to give me a different one, though, because we already did Skip the Flip. So what's another book or another podcast that has had a big impact on your business and on your life?
Yeah, and so this one, we talked about Skip the Flip, and we also talked about Rich Dad, Poor Dad. But if there was a third, it was going to be Brandon Turner's book on how to invest in rental properties. That was what third book I read. And really getting down on that foundation that we talked about is just build out your basics. Know some of the steps, but you don't have to exactly know where those steps are going to go and how they're going to happen. You're just going to have them in the back of your mind and knowing it's there. And so that was able to get me and nudge me off. Okay, I have equipped myself with a mindset. I have the steps, and then I now know what the first one is, and let's move forward and chase the dream.
Yeah, I love it, man.
Yeah, that's really cool, man. All right, well, let's throw in our new question.
Let's get it.
What is your idea of chasing freedom?
Yeah, absolutely. And so one of my big inspirations posted a video about a week ago on his Instagram and said, I have a 90% off deal. And let me share this deal with you. And so it kind of hones you in and you're like, okay, 90% off, that's incredible. If you work 3 to 5 years now and on a business, on real estate investing, on something of your own, and you put everything into it, there's an extreme possibility that you could leave in 3 to 5 years with financial freedom to where you're having the 90% of the rest of your life to do what you love and do what you would want to do and live your life the way you want to do it, because you've achieved a way to have a company or an investment pay you monthly.
Yep.
And it's mailbox money. It doesn't matter. That money's coming in, whether you're at home, you're on vacation, you're skiing, you're at the beach, it's anywhere in between. And so being able to know that, and I just was married about 3 months ago. And so
congrats, man.
Thank you. Not having children yet, knowing that I'm going to spend this time now to when I have those children, that I'm not required to spend 40 years.
Yeah, come on.
40 hours a week at a job that is making somebody extremely wealthy, that I have the freedom to come in and not miss a baseball or football game or cheerleading game, and come in and be able to devote that time. Because I think that in the American dream is kind of skewed of just saying we're going to spend 40 years working. And so, and I'm sure that I will never stop doing something. And so that's not really the thing. It's being able to have the say in how you spend your time and how, what you do that day is so crucial.
That's really impactful, man. I love that. For me, it's the same. You know what I mean? Like, I'm in the same boat. Jeff's lucky and he's a dad already, but I'm trying to set up my life in the same way, right? Like, when I do have my children, I don't want there to ever be a restriction on the amount of time I can spend with them.
Yep.
That wouldn't work for me, you know?
Man, I know that video you're talking about. I sent that to like every single person in my Instagram thread that I just like, there's probably about 15 people. Like, because I've learned over the years, you can't create entrepreneurs, but you can notice people who have that spirit and you can try and push them towards it. And there's about 15 people in my life that I'm like, I know you got it, bro. And I just need you to take that freaking step, because your life is going to be so much better when you do. And so like when a really inspirational video comes along, those are my 15. I have them all in one group on Instagram, and it's boom, here you go. And I dropped that video. I thought that was awesome, man. It's so true. You get 90% of your life back if you will just focus and take risks for 10%. And guess what? If you screw it all up, spend another 10%, you still got 80% of your life left, bro. Still better than giving up 60 to 70 to 80% of your life working for somebody else.
Absolutely, man.
Well, Chris, man, I think you are awesome, man. This is the first time I got to virtually meet you. Hopefully we get to meet in person sometime soon. But, man, you just dropped a ton of knowledge. I love your mindset. I love the abundance way that you think. I think there's no doubt that the reason you were so successful so fast is because of the way that you think. So just keep thinking that way, man. I'm stoked to see what big things you do.
Yeah, absolutely, brother. And then, hey, I have a feeling that there's going to be a lot of people who want to reach out to you. And when I say a lot, you know, probably like my cousins, my aunts, my uncles.
There's like five people who listen to the show. So,
but in the event that someone does want to reach out to you, how can they get a hold of you? What's the best way?
Yeah. Instagram is the best as of now. And so my username is Chris Petty, PETTY15.
Okay. Chris Petty 15.
Give a follow and send a DM and we can go from there.
Okay. Sounds awesome, good, man. Brother. Well, we'll put that in the show notes as well. So anyone who wants to reach out to Chris, go ahead and send him a direct message on Instagram. Dude, we really appreciate your time.
Absolutely. Thanks, brother.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys.
That was a good show. Cool. All right, guys. We'll see you next time. All right, guys. Thanks for tuning in to this week's episode of the Chasing Freedom Podcast with Noah and Jeff.
Please subscribe to our YouTube channel in the show notes below. And if you ever want to get a hold of us, feel free to do it via our Instagrams. You can also follow us for our funny content on TikTok.